better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
So Arkansas basketball plays Texas A&M tomorrow at Bud Walton Arena, right? And we've been talking about it. Everyone's excited about it. It's going to be sour crowd and all that. Want to hear what Buzz Williams, the coach of Texas A&M, had to say?
Yeah.
Make sense out of this for me, Tommy, please, if you don't mind.
I thought it was interesting in that Fayetteville area. There's more millionaires per square mile than any other town in America. And that didn't seem to fit what I thought would be right. And so I just wanted to learn. And obviously, a lot of that came from Walmart and studying Mr. Walton. And how did it become the Walmart that we know? And how did Tyson Chicken get there? And, well, it was because of Walmart. And now Walmart sells all Tyson Chicken. And then I learned more about the Tyson Chicken actually makes a lot of other chicken. It's just wrapped in other wrapping other than Tyson chicken, which kind of bothered me. And I'm not saying any of it egotistically. I just went over there trying to learn, not to be a basketball coach.
You want me to make sense of that?
I want you to make sense of that.
I think there's a guy that he's trying to be a better investor of his money, maybe?
Okay.
I think anyone that wants to be great studies greatness. Walmart's a pretty good study of greatness.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're only the biggest company in the world. They've done something right.
So, I mean, if you want to study greatness, you go to Benton County. You study Walmart.
Mm.
And he's right about everything he said there.
No, he is right.
Just J.B. Hunt's up there as well because of Walmart. There's other Fortune 500 companies that headquarter and have offices in Northwest Arkansas, all because a little company called Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Man called Sam Walton.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get what he's saying.
Why is that is part of a basketball press conference is the question.
Yeah, and because he was asked about, he took a summer trip to Northwest Arkansas.
Right.
And that was his response. It's just, I guess he was going up there to, I don't know if he went up there with the intent of studying about Walmart. Or if it just kind of happened while he was up visiting.
Here for the shareholders meeting.
Maybe he was. Maybe he was going to go see the shareholders concert, whoever it was. I forgot who it was this past year, but I don't know. Maybe that was the case. I just thought it was kind of interesting that, you know, he went through that and talked about the millionaires per capita up in, it's not Fayetteville, technically, it's more Bentonville and Rogers area, but still in the Northwest Arkansas area. Mm-hmm. And then talked about how Tyson Chicken, actually they wrap other chicken besides Tyson Chicken. Wanted to make that known too. So anyways, I just thought it was kind of interesting that he decided to take that route when talking about this game tomorrow.
I think coaches like to bring stuff up that is outside of their sport because it broadens their horizons, makes him look smarter to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, and anybody that can come out and talk about all the books that they've read and the things that they've studied and talking about and relating it to basketball or football or whatever sport that they coach is always going to make you sound like an intellectual.
Well, I mean, it just, you know, file that one away. Maybe he knows a little more about Northwest Arkansas than you realize, and if somewhere down the line you have an opening at Arkansas, maybe he's someone that should be on your list, perhaps.
Maybe so.
Maybe.
But
I don't know.
I can tell you right now, if I started telling everybody, I'm not saying everybody would believe this, but if I started telling everybody that I've really worked on my skills as a radio host because I've read the readings of William Tabitha from the early 17th century on speaking to large groups of people, then I'm sure people would be like, wow, that's that's inspiring. And you obviously are an intellectual and wise beyond your years.
But somehow you accidentally shaved your beard off, too.
Yeah, I accidentally did that, too. By the way, that guy's not real. I just made him up. William Tabitha sounded like a great name.
Could have went with William Shakespeare. You had me fooled.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm telling you, I can be very convincing. He taught me that in his in the readings, Tommy. Right. That's what he talks about.
Tabitha's known for that.
I'm trying to sound extremely convincing.
I remember studying him my sophomore year.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I bet. I bet. And World Lit, I believe, is what it was called way back when.
World Lit 202.
Yeah, but you know, I'll just continue to BS my way through and just figure it out. So let's go to the phone lines. Danny is in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. Who was that talking about, Northwest Arkansas?
That was Buzz Williams, the coach of Texas A&M.
Oh, okay, coach of Texas A&M.
Yeah.
Well, wasn't he offered a job at Arkansas at one time?
I don't know if he was offered a job. I mean, are you talking about in this latest coaching search or just as an assistant?
Not this one, but the one before.
I wouldn't think so.
His name's been brought up.
It's come up.
But I don't know that it's been brought up by, like, Jeff Long, I don't think. To my knowledge,
I was just thinking he was under consideration this last.
He famously remember he had this video when he was at Virginia Tech. I think it was when he was at, may have been when, because where was he at before then?
Marquette.
Yeah, he's at Marquette. He did a video. There was this video that kind of went what you'd call, you know, I guess viral, where he instructed his team how they were going to behave during the national anthem, and he had veterans come into his practice, and it was a really inspiring video at a time where, you know, we were having a lot of issues with the national anthem, and that thing made rounds two or three times on social media. He became, I think, kind of a folk hero or a social media hero in a lot of circles because of the way he handled that situation, and that video got a lot of play, and his name got a lot of run off that. Yeah, the way he instructed his team that we're going to stand, we're going to cross our heart, and he brought these guys in and said, here's why, you know, because they fought and many of their friends died for our country. It was well done.
A lot of these young people really don't know much history. They're not taught much in school.
He took the time to teach and coach his team on why it matters. So I remember watching that video. I thought it was good.
As far as you were talking about Eric Musselman, three-game losing streak, et cetera, well, you know, like you said, that's probably going to happen. That's okay as long as we got 7, 8, 9-game winning streak go along with it.
Yeah, at least you're not unreasonable, you know.
I'm not unreasonable enough. I like where we're going with this coaching staff. Really, just I like the Pittman hire. I was thinking they were going to hire Drinkwitz. It kind of caught me off guard, but we got somebody that wants a job, is a good recruiter, can get in good coaches. And, I mean, do you not really think that we're going to get better coaching next year than we had last year?
Could it be worse?
It couldn't be.
Me and you and John could go up there, and I think it'd be better.
It couldn't be any worse. That is the worst coach team I believe I've ever seen. It's pitiful. We had more talent than that. But anyway, guys, have a good day, and thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate it as always, Danny. No, I mean, you're going to get a little better coaching this time around. Yeah, but to go back to your point, we had just had Clay Henry. He's going to be joining us later in the show. He texted and said Jeff Long had talked to him while he was at Marquette and was probably Jeff Long's first choice before hiring Mike Anderson. So, yeah, he at least was up for the job or at least talked to when Jeff Long was there. So just want to remind everybody of that. But also yesterday, not only did Buzz Williams talk about Walmart, which I know isn't very important, but also Eric Musselman met with the media to give a little pregame interview and talk about this game. And I thought that this comment, which me and Tommy, we've talked about this a little bit, I believe, because it was mentioned in the same of his Eric Musselman live show that he had a few weeks ago. And he was talking and asking about the comments or at least the polls, the people that are disrespecting their team, that don't think that they're going to do very well, all of that. Well, he didn't shy away from it. He was very honest. Take a listen.
Yeah, certainly. We listened to comments. We've read everything. We've posted articles. We've posted articles where people talk about every team in the conference except maybe us or one other team. And you know, I think that, you know, again, maybe everybody's right and we're, you know, what they said we would be. But that's why you play the games, and we're looking forward to to going out and compete and can't wait to play in front of a sold-out crowd on Saturday.
Now, that's completely different from what you normally hear from coaches when they're asked about, hey, so-and-so picked you at this position in the conference. What are your thoughts? I mean, this seems to be something that gets talked about, whether it's SEC Media Days, especially in football. I think it was Brett Bielema, which was infamously known for saying, pick us last and watch what happens. You know, it was...
You were right.
Yeah, exactly. You ended up being right as the media. But when coaches get asked about this, in most cases, they will take the approach of, we don't listen to that stuff. We're focused on our team. We only worry about what's going on in this locker room. Bull crap. Same old coach speak. Eric Musselman is completely different, where he's asked about these people that pick them 11th out of 14 teams in SEC play or whatnot, and he says, yeah, we see it. Yeah, we read everything. Yep. And yeah, we let everybody know in this locker room and we share it with them saying, hey, this is what so-and-so or this is what this outlet or who thinks about you.
Why do you think he's that way? Where do you think he learned to utilize or deploy that method in his coaching?
The only thing I could think of is, of course, it's always about motivation,
right?
I think is the number one deal. But I also think that he embraced just complete and total transparency.
Yeah.
Where I'm not going to sit here as I'm a coach, which coaches who say that, you know, we don't worry about what everyone's saying outside of these doors. Yes, you do.
Yeah, you do.
Yes, you do.
And you read it all.
100%. And you remember it. So I think he's approaching it saying, I'm not going to try to sit here and suppress my feeling or emotion about stuff like that because I read it. I read it and I see it. So I might as well just embrace it and say, you know what? I read it. Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Maybe they're right. But I want to let everybody know that that's what they think about us.
Just thinking aloud here. I just wonder if it was something from his time in the NBA.
That too.
Because there's so much in the media out there in the NBA and all the players talk. Players talk more than the coaches, at least in today's NBA for sure. And you know, a lot of that could be motivating. They like to talk a lot of trash. And I just wonder if that's something that was a tactic used in his time in professional basketball at the NBA level. And he, you know, he's used that as best he can in the college game.
Mm-hmm.
Just thinking out loud there.
But that would make sense because, listen.
Because there's just so much of it.
Right. And listen, I think even more so in this day and age with social media and everything, to try and say that you are completely and totally removed from any sort of comments being made about you, about your team, about your teammates, about your players, whoever, whether it's coaches or players or anything. The fact that you cannot be removed from it. You see it. You know, back in a time where it was just newspaper writers,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was like, hey, what'd you think about this article? I didn't read the newspaper. And you know what? You may not have read the newspaper. You're like, well, maybe you didn't read the newspaper. But in today's day and age, you can't run from that stuff.
It's in your hand.
It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. And not only that, but it's people from all over. It could be writers and it could be just fans. It could be anybody that you see it from. And so I think another factor going into it is Musselman's like, listen, it's out there. Instead of trying to run from it and trying to suppress it, trying to act like it doesn't exist and trying to make it go away, let's just roll with it and say, hey, all right, yeah, we see it. Yeah. And we're going to see if you're right or not.
Whose job do you think it is to go and do this research, to stay on top of this? Because, you know, Musselman didn't have time to be scanning the internet all, because you'd have to have someone that's their part of their job. They spend hours a day looking for this type of stuff. Or someone's feeding it to him. Wouldn't that be a interesting job to have? What's your job? Well, I'll go out and look for trash talkers.
Probably pays well pretty good, too. Hopefully it does. But, yeah, I'm sure that he has somebody that does that.
I guarantee you that someone's part of someone's mm-hmm. assigned duties.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that more coaches should be this way? Should be have that mentality more so? Or at least you wish they would be more open about it if they did?
I think too often coaches, at least publicly, don't want to treat everybody like adults, like we can't handle certain things. As fans, as media, their players, whoever. I think people also get afraid of hurting other people's feelings. You know? And people, and I think we're seeing, particularly in our political environment now, some people really embrace a candid spokesperson, someone that will speak their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Other people want to run as fast as they can because abrasive commentary offends them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to me, I think when you can just, you know, these are adults. They're young adults as players. But I think the more you can treat people like adults, probably the more you develop a relationship with them.
Yeah.
Not coaching a junior high team here, a men's college basketball team, you know?
Yeah. And I think having that transparency about mm-hmm. things like this can yeah. only be beneficial to the program and to these players. Because again, especially with them, like everything that gets talked about, I'm just telling you right now, folks, in case you didn't know this, but kids in college, especially college athletes, big time college athletes, ones that play football, play basketball, and even in some cases baseball, they're on social media and they search for their name to see where it's being mentioned. They do that. They will go on Twitter yep. and type in their name and saying, all right, what are people saying about me? I want to see what. Well, we know who wrote an article about me. Did they mention yeah. me in their stories? And if they did, I want to show that to my family. Or if it's the other way where it's something negative, they want to either quote tweet it and call them out, or they want to block them or whatever. But kids these days, especially college athletes, search their names.
Sounds like something you have experience with.
Because it's honest. Like we've all done it. And people in my generation especially have done it. Because they want to see what people are saying about them. And in a lot of cases, and this is where I know we're really diving in deep into some sort of mental health study, but in a lot of cases, that only leads to more harm than good because you start to see what people truly think about you. Totally. And then it messes with you and it stays on your mind and you're just like, and it eats at you because why are people saying this about me? What's that guy's deal? And listen, it doesn't happen just with college athletes. It happens just in general on social media. And so it eats at you. And when it eats at you, you start letting it bother. You start thinking, I mean, we have even professional athletes, Tommy. I don't know if you remember this story with Kevin Durant, who was having burner Twitter accounts to tweet at himself positive things because he couldn't handle the negativity of the things that people were saying at him on social media. Like, it's insane how much people put into what people say. And I think that something as small as this, even though it may just be on a smaller scale, something like this and Eric Musselman understanding that that's the way kids, and that especially at the ages between 18 to 22, operate is, hey, don't let this stuff eat at you. Let's embrace it and make ourselves better for it. Let's use it for motivation. If people give you high praise, pat yourself on the back. If people go after you and criticize you, prove them wrong. Embrace it, I think, is the best way for a mental health, especially, to just go out there and use it to make yourself better.
Morning Rush is brought to you by Crabtree RV in Alma. They're celebrating their 70th anniversary in 2020. And they're hosting the Greater Fort Smith RV Boat, RV and Outdoor Show. You can shop indoors inside their 26,000 square foot indoor showroom, which is going to be loaded full with travel trailers, fifth wheels, and all their great inventory, as well as bass and ski boats and pontoon boats. You can take advantage of great deals on golf carts, mowers, side-by-sides, four-wheelers, outdoor clothing and equipment. They're going to have great companies that are going to be there as well, like Cofers Marine, Alma Tractor, Golf Cars at Fort Smith, Gelco Clothing and Outdoors, all going to be there for this great show. It's January 31st through February the 8th, all at Crabtree RV in Alma, the Greater Fort Smith RV Boat and Outdoor Show at Crabtree RV, where your family's dreams come true.
And another thing about Eric Musselman, and I know that people are starting to realize this more and more every day, is I think like Eric Musselman is a coach that Arkansas fans have not seen before in the way he handles himself. I mean, and Arkansas in their history in sports has had some very big personalities as head coaches. I mean, let's be honest. Nolan Richardson was an extremely large personality. Brad Bielema was a personality. Houston Nutt was a personality. You know, Dave Van Horn, I don't know if I call him personality. He wins, and that's all that matters. But still, you've had some personalities in coaching. And then you've had some guys who are completely opposite, like Bobby Petrino, that has zero personality. So they all come in different shapes and forms. But with Eric Musselman and just how he approaches everything, and if you don't, like, look at his social media account. Like, he goes all in, and it's in it, the way he talks about other coaches and how he studies them, because we were talking about with Buzz Williams and the weird comment he made about Walmart earlier. You know, there's a lot of things about Eric Musselman that you wouldn't think a college basketball coach of a major program would be doing. But, you know, I remember when he was hired, he had put out on his Twitter account a few months prior, given a Chad Morris quote that Chad Morris said in a press conference. It's like, why? And he said that he looks at other coaches and he tries to learn more, not just from coaches of his own sport, but coaches in general.
Coaches know coaches.
Yeah.
And they see, here's what coaches love to go to practices and watch practice methods.
Yeah.
The way they schedule things. Even in other sports, you can go and watch how a coach practices his team and take something away from that. Even a basketball coach could go watch a soccer practice or a baseball practice and probably learn something about the organization of the practice or a drill or a routine and something you could take back and apply to your sport or your practice or the way you organize things that could help you. Coaches know coaching. I mean, we just see a practice. Coaches are watching the organization, the way it's structured, why you did this drill before that drill, why you scrimmaged when you did in practice, when you gave breaks, you know, keep going. You know, all of this is, none of it's willy-nilly. It's all scheduled, laid out for a purpose and a reason. And I think coaches pick up on all that. And that's why you can study and learn. And I think you're exactly right. You got a coach up there that tries to learn and study not just how a coach goes about motivating or recruiting athletes or some of these things, but, you know, the nuts and bolts of it too.
Mm-hmm.
How hard are you on a player after a game? How, you know, there's all sorts of little things that go into it that you can learn.
Yeah. And if you need another, I don't think people do, but if you need another little feather in your cap of why Eric Musselman might be a great coach, you know, yesterday was being reported this by Dave Matter that apparently when Arkansas played Kentucky in football this past year down there in Lexington, John Calipari went and found Jerry Jones in his suite at the game and said, "You have no idea what kind of coach you got." Yeah. That's what he said when he was talking about Eric Musselman. Now, I still hate John Calipari, and I appreciate the comment, but you know, there's something to be said about when certain coaches, especially great coaches, are very complimentary. Because, listen, it's one thing to say, like, what, for instance, what Dabo Sweeney did with Chad Morris. He, you know, he's, oh, this is a great guy. Or Gus Malzahn said the same thing. You know, it's one thing to do that. But then it's another thing to where if you actually legitimately believe it and the results are there along with it, then it's just a sign of respect because great coaches respect other great coaches as well. It's not just coaches and coaches. Great coaches and other great coaches have a mutual respect for it as well. And that's something that really people don't understand as much because they just hear a glowing type of review for a coach and they say, oh, well, he must be a great coach because so-and-so said it. But it's different when you actually have results to back it up. And that's the one thing that Eric Musselman has, is that he does have results to back up all the things that he's done. Now he's just got to be able to translate it at Arkansas.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
By the way, it was some big news yesterday, and it sucks because this is a huge blow to Arkansas, especially the football team, and this is something that hopefully Sam Pittman can get corrected and fixed. But Chandler Morris committed to Oklahoma.
I was shocked by this.
I know. Arkansas really missed out. Yeah. I can't believe that they could not find a way to get him signed.
I wonder how that in-home visit went. Clay, do you have any insight on that when Pittman and his staff went to the Morris home? I wonder how that in-home visit went.
Do not know. That's his strength, though. I mean, that's, right?
What? Whose strength?
Sam's.
Yeah. I think they were just looking for a spark, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, anyways, he had committed to and signed with Oklahoma. But I know we won't spend this whole time talking about Chandler Morris, but don't you a little surprised, though, or at least a little bit like he was going to play for Chad Morris's dad at Arkansas when he was committed. And then his dad gets a job as the offense coordinator, quarterback coach over at Auburn. And then it seemed like, hey, well, that would make sense. He was committed to play for his dad at Arkansas. So why would he not be go ahead and get committed and play for his dad at Auburn?
He's seen enough.
I know that was the joke that was making its rounds, but I truly wonder.
They've got a returning quarterback. That's it. Yeah, they've got a returning quarterback.
Bo Nix.
He's going to start for 2 to 3 more years. I think we went over this, didn't we, the first of the week? Maybe we didn't. But it's like he wasn't coming to Arkansas. Sam knew that. I mean, I was joking earlier. You didn't get my joke. But anyway, that's okay. Sometimes I've thrown them right over your head before, too.
It was a mile high. Yeah.
It was way up there. Yeah. You needed the oxygen.
Your intellect's just off the charts. Yeah.
This is not a surprise as far as him not going to Arkansas. Obviously, that's the joke that we're discussing.
Yeah.
But the thing is that
I just think it would be really funny if there actually was an in-home visit with Sam Pittman sitting down with Chandler and his parents. That would be funny, you know. Mm-hmm. It would be awkward, odd, uncomfortable, and funny. But obviously it didn't happen.
So Chandler they thought maybe Chandler would come in for a visit. You know, he hasn't been to Arkansas yet.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Well, I will say that yesterday when I saw the video,
he never moved.
It was unfamiliar with the area.
Well, I was about to say when I saw the video yesterday of him committing and signing with Oklahoma, I was like, oh, wow, that's what Chad Morris's family looks like, because that was really the first time I had seen him. It seemed like, but when he signed yesterday, again, going to Oklahoma is not a bad place to go if you're a quarterback, as we've seen. Just a couple of Heisman Trophy winners and some All-Americans, no big deal. So
what if Lincoln Riley ends up being the head coach of the Cowboys now? Since they
wouldn't that be something?
Officially parted ways with Jason Garrett.
Yeah. I know that they're – I think.
Don't you think Lincoln Riley is smarter than that?
I mean, I don't know. For whatever reason, because Urban Meyer's talked about this job, and people saying that Matt Rhule is going to end up in the NFL. He may go with the Giants job, though, instead. But I guess college coaches right now are all the flavors.
No. I can understand Lincoln Riley going somewhere else, but going to Dallas, that place is a zoo. I mean, the owner of the team having a press conference after every game. I mean, it's just like, it's like he's going to critique the coach, 20 minutes after the game before he even does his media interviews. Jerry's telling him what he did wrong. I mean, it's just that's not a place that you want to be. I mean, it went sour with Jimmy Johnson, and everybody understands that Jimmy just finally threw up his hands and is like, I can't do this. And he's one of the greatest coaches of all time. And if he ran off Jimmy, why would you want to coach there?
There's some sort of allure about the Dallas Cowboys star, though. I mean,
Cowboys, Yankees, Notre Dame. I mean, who else is on that list?
I mean, you could say if you want to go to the NBA, it's like the Lakers, are always going to be up there.
There's just a handful of jobs in sports that are dream jobs.
The Yankees
jobs.
Under George Steinbrenner, that was similar. Yeah. I mean, it was a place that it's like every 2-game losing streak, George is calling you to his office. I mean, it just, it's – and I think that for someone like Lincoln Riley to take the Cowboys job would be a stunner. Yeah. I mean, he's in the Big 12. He can win 10 every year. I mean, it's just like that. That place is there's not a defensive lineman in the league.
Yeah, because I'm looking at his success at Oklahoma, and I would be shocked if he ended up leaving for the Cowboys. But I know I know the Cowboys are interested in him, and seemed like for a while there for a period that college football coaches translating to the NFL was always disaster. Like, remember the Steve Spurrier's project that they had? He was arguably the greatest coach during that time at Florida. Goes to the NFL, doesn't have the same success. I mean, there's a numerous amount of coaches that tried that hand and didn't work, but it seems like over the past 5 to 10 years, the NFL has really been targeting college football coaches more, and some have had success, some not. I think Pete Carroll kind of broke that mold a little bit, where he had the high-level success at USC, goes to Seattle, wins a Super Bowl, constantly has a team that's in the playoffs. And you've seen it even as recent as this past year, where Cliff Kingsbury got fired from Texas Tech, and he gets the Arizona Cardinals head coaching job.
So, that was bizarre. Yeah, that was really bizarre.
So there's some sort of allure, too, from the NFL and a lot of these franchises that they're going after college football coaches.
Well, they want to figure out this RPO stuff better, and I think that's some of it.
No, I think that's a huge part of it, is that they don't have
they want to evolve offenses in the NFL, and they haven't figured out how. And the real deal is the NFL defenses are so good they'll stop whatever you can put on the field.
Exactly right.
And that's why all the rules are set up to score more points, because the defenses are that good.
Mm-hmm. And it's also going along with some franchises that, you know, you mentioned needing a spark. It's also going along with some franchises that are looking at, like for Arizona Cardinals, for instance. Who did they draft number one overall last year? Drafted Kyler Murray, mm-hmm. number one overall. Well, they can't have Kyler Murray, who had so much high-level success in college football, being coached by a guy who's never coached a type of quarterback like that. So they got to because it's a quarterback-driven league, so they got to bring in somebody. And that's what Lincoln Riley has done, and I think that that's what the allure about him is. They've seen the quarterbacks he's developed. They saw Baker Mayfield. They saw what they did to Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts even this past year. And I'm sure Jerry Jones or any NFL team, but especially Jerry with Dak Prescott, who's a fantastic quarterback, is saying, I need a guy that can put my quarterback in position to be successful, because if our quarterback is great, our team's going to be great. At least that's what it looks like from that perspective of the NFL and how college football can translate into that. So, again, going back to the original talk, I know we kind of went on a little digression there, but to go back to the original thing is that if Lincoln Riley ended up leaving the Sooners for the Cowboys, I think that would be a shock to most. And I don't know what Oklahoma would do. I really don't, because
yeah. If he goes to the Cowboys, just think about this: who he's got to play. He's got six games against the Eagles, the Redskins, and the Giants. Now, you tell me what those three teams have done over the last 5 years, and it has been draft the best defensive linemen in America, most of them SEC players, and that's not the recipe for playing the kind of quarterback that Lincoln Riley wants to play, which is a mobile guy that's going to give you fits. They will break that quarterback in half. In fact, Dak Prescott, who is a good runner, got to where he didn't really want to run in those divisional games. I don't think Lincoln Riley will think that his system will translate into the NFC East, but that's getting specific, and it's going away from just the Dallas Cowboys thought, and some may not understand that, but I think he's smarter than that. I think he's going to stay in that league where they don't have any defensive tackles, any defensive linemen, to speak of, and that he can run the ball when he wants to. And that's what he's doing now at Oklahoma. He could not do that against LSU, and he couldn't do it if he goes to the SEC. But it's in that Big 12 where there is a dearth of defensive line talent, and I've taught everybody in the game will tell you that. That's the problem with that league. Baylor was a little bit different with Pat, with Lynch. But anyway, that I just don't see Lincoln Riley making that jump. Now he's making too much money and having it too easy.
Let's go to the phone lines. Wayne is in Fort Smith. What's going on, Wayne?
Hey, guys. Hey, first of all, I just wanted to tell y'all how much I appreciate y'all's show.
Thank you, Wayne.
Even more so, how disappointed I am in the afternoon show that's on this station. I don't know if them guys are your buddies over at R and Z.
They are?
Man, that thing has turned into a circus. Right. I mean, I can't even listen to them no more. So disappointed. They're all about themselves. They rarely talk about sports anymore.
Moving on, Wayne.
But anyways, guys, it makes me really appreciate y'all's show, staying true. What I've always, when I tune into sports radio, what I want to hear. So thank y'all. I love y'all's show. Second of all, the Chandler Morris deal. I'll tell you why he didn't end up at Auburn, because Gus Malzahn is smarter than Chad Morris. I mean, if I was a young quarterback getting recruited, why would I want to go compete against the coach's son or the offensive coordinator's son? Gus Malzahn just a little bit smarter, man, with a conflict of interest. Never understood why Chad Morris would let his son come play for him anyways. I'm going to hang up. Listen, guys, happy Friday. Have a great weekend. Love y'all. Bye.
I appreciate it, Wayne. And that was always the topic when Chandler had committed to Arkansas. And it just seemed like – because, listen, we've seen coaches' sons play at Arkansas, maybe not head coaches, but the whole Bobby Allen thing, he was in the program of sorts, but he wasn't right. A head coach or anything like that. So we've seen it to where coaches' sons ended up playing, and it's not just at Arkansas, but in anywhere in college football and in college sports in general. But it is like a really different dynamic when you have a big time, if you're the head coach of a big time football program and your son is a big time recruit that colleges from all over the country are trying to get, And you want him to play for you because, listen, I mean, if your son's good enough to play for you, you feel like that would be a nothing but a positive to have. Right. But it's just such a difficult dynamic, though.
It's so rare. I mean, name me how many other situations have you seen around college football like this where the head coach's son was a highly coveted quarterback recruit? Because I think it's totally different when it's the quarterback versus if the coach's kid was a wide receiver or an offensive lineman.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying.
It's just a totally different dynamic. So this is such an anomaly that there is no, you know, here's how you handle it. You know, yeah. Chad Morris isn't the head coach anymore.
I'll give you one Arkansas scenario, and it's not exactly what you just mentioned, but it was, the dynamics of it was just brutal. And it was when Nolan coached his son, Notes, and Notes played point guard. And I talked to Rose about it, and she said she was constantly on Nolan, that he was way too hard on his son. And Nolan admitted to me that he was harder on Notes than he was on any player that he'd ever had. And he said, I had to be. I had to show the other players that there wasn't any favoritism. And he said, I probably pushed it way beyond what it should have been. And it was a tough situation. So the dynamics of that are unbelievable difficult for both the player and the coach. And often it just doesn't work. And I think what you guys have said is exactly right. And what Wayne was saying, that Gus understood that maybe. Now, Gus recruited him. Gus was one of the first offers that he had. And I remember that Chandler and Chad went to Gus's camp 2 summers ago. And Gus is like, I'm going to offer him. And says, you better offer him too, because if not, you're going to be playing against him. Because whether it be Alabama, Auburn, Georgia, they're all going to recruit him. So, that was, Chad said that was his aha moment. I better offer my son because I do not want to play against him.
Football Friday brought to you by Harry Robinson Buick GMC. Happy New Year from Harry Robinson. The lowest prices ever during the end of your sales event, which ends this weekend at Harry Robinson. The lowest price on the remaining 2019 GMC Sierras. Ask about that, up to $16,000 off. 2019 Buick Encores, the lowest price ever, only $16,999. And 2020 GMC Terrains, only $21,999. It's all at Harry Robinson Buick GMC, exit 11 off of I-540 in Fort Smith.
And you know, another interesting dynamic in all of that is just to put yourself in as one of those players that would be on that team. You know, and this would have been the scenario that if Chad Morris was still the head coach at Arkansas and Chandler had signed with Arkansas, just imagine that if you were like a KJ Jefferson or another quarterback on that, where your head coach, as well as the guy that runs the offense, has his son, his highly coveted recruited son, coming in as quarterback as well. I mean, even if it's not the college level, you see at the high school level, the junior high level. I mean, mm-hmm. Tommy, you've refereed a lot of games. I'm sure there's been a lot of times where you have reffed games where the coach's son was either on the team or even in some cases the quarterback.
Well, when I was starting out as a broadcaster in the play-by-play booth and learning from the great Glenn O'Neill, the coach's son was the quarterback. His name was Barry Lunny. Barry Lunny Sr. was the coach, and Barry Lunny Jr. was the quarterback. And I remember a lot of people when Barry Lunny Jr. started as a sophomore in what would have been the 89 season, he's only starting because he's the coach's kid. And they quickly figured out, no, he's the best.
He actually can play.
He can play a little bit. And they figured out pretty quick that this is a guy that's going to do some great things. And, yeah, I mean, that was my kind of first, you know, awakening of coach's son, quarterback, that whole deal was watching the Lunnies do that in 89, 90, and 91 at Southside, Portsmouth Southside.
Yeah. That's probably the greatest example you'll see, and it worked out.
And I think it worked out. I think Barry had an okay career.
Right.
Worked out again with Daniel, too.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and here's the thing too, and adding into that, Tommy, is that if you were a head coach of a college football program and your son wasn't similar to what like Chandler Morris is doing, would you just your personality? Would you want your son to come play for you at quarterback, especially?
I think what Clay said is exactly right. It's hard to balance it because you don't want to lose the trust of the team,
yeah,
and the trust of your coaches that you're playing favorites or you're trying to, because we've all seen it one way or the other where the coach's kid gets shorted. And I think what has to happen is the talent of the player has to be so overwhelmingly good. There's no doubt what the coach's decision is right. Play your son because your son is the best player at that position. That's what you hope happens. It's when it's really close, it makes it very difficult on everybody. And when there's a true competition, what you hope is there's not much competition because the coach's kid is just head and shoulders above whoever he's competing with at that position.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's often the case in high school when you're talking about the Southside deal with Barry and Daniel playing for their dad. College, you know, you've recruited players to, and sometimes they're older players, and he comes in. And I think what's unique about the Auburn situation that maybe is different than some others is that Chad was going to be the quarterback coach. He's going to coach his son as opposed to at Arkansas where he's the head coach and there's a little insulation there that you've got another guy coaching and you can say, I'm walking away from this and I'm going to do what he tells me. Now, that guy might be smart enough to know my job is dependent on me playing the coach's son. would Joe Craddock say, no, I think I need to play this guy and go in and tell Chad Morrison, your son's not the best one. Well, no, yeah, he is. Well, then if that comes back at you, you know you're looking for another job, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, see, and that's what I was going to add into it, that if your son is just like a stud, a guy like a Tua, somebody that you just know is a surefire guy that's going to make your team better, that's the type of risk that you're going to have to just take if you're a head coach because you got to win. Your job is to win games. And if your son or whoever that your relative, whatever, if getting them on the team is going to help you win games, then you got to do it. Yeah. But it's just in a lot of cases, though, and this is just from my perspective. I could be wrong about this, but from my perspective, if I see that happen with coaches and their sons playing in college football, it seems very high school to me. It seems like a high school thing that we have seen so many times where, and I know the Barry Lunny is an exception to the rule, but there's been a lot of times. I know that when I even played in junior high, the coach's son got special treatment. The coach's son was always going to be the starting position. It didn't feel like there, even if he was a great player, it didn't feel like from the team. It's like, did he really earn it though?
Mm-hmm.
Is he really the best guy? And it could be the case. It could not be the case, but that's just the perception that you get if you're a player on that team.
It just puts everybody in a tremendously difficult position.
Yes, exactly right. And I just don't think that difficult position is worth it.
What's the kid supposed to do? Just not play?
No.
What's the coach supposed to do? But
that's why there's the difference.
Have his kids go to another school?
But that's the difference between college and high school, is that in the high school realm, is that you have to be able to approach it to where, hey, this is my kid and he's the best player. You can do it. But in college, you get to go out and you get to recruit people.
Well, I think there's something special about having the opportunity to coach your own kid. I think just something that's alluring to that to a lot of coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that opportunity because you spend so much time when they're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old away from them because you're coaching. It's a highly intensive job that requires a lot of hours. Here's an opportunity to spend more time with my kid and let them see what I do firsthand and be involved in their development. And I can see the attraction to that.
Well, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but at the end of the day, if you're alluring, your number one allurement, assuming that's a word, needs to be winning games.
Is that a word, Clay? We'll yield to you.
I think he can pull that off.
All right.
Yes.
All right, yeah, but it's about winning games. That should be your first, second, and third priority.
Right. Yeah.
And I understand that there might be an allurement of playing or coaching your kid, and I get all what you just said, but when you're looking at it from the perspective of a coach, your job is to win games.
Yeah.
Number one. Yeah. So.
All right. I bottom line, particularly when you're being paid $3 or $4 million, $5 million a year. So.
Mm-hmm. In college football, especially.
It's just an anomaly. It's a one-off.
Yeah. And it doesn't, and again, this doesn't, you're seeing things that never happened before like this. And the fact that he's going to go to Oklahoma and you got Chad Morris at Auburn, they're going separate ways. It's going to work out essentially for both of them. But, if I'm a quarterback right now and if I'm in high school and I'm highly recruited and Oklahoma offers me, I mean, is there a better job than going over to Oklahoma as a quarterback? Is there a better school to go to have success as a quarterback than going to Oklahoma? No, makes too much sense. Honestly, that's the best bet for me.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Now, Tommy had to step away for the show for the final hour, and instead of giving you the real reason why he's stepping away, I'm going to make up a better story because that's what makes it more fun. Clay, Tommy had to step away because he had to go recycle his sandals and save the rainforest. That's what I'm going to go with this morning.
So now, you think he's listening?
Oh, he's always listening. Even if he doesn't have his radio on, somehow, he's always listening.
Yeah, I think we should talk about referees for the next hour.
Oh, that's a good one. And just talk about how terrible they are and how this in the SEC especially, they don't get any calls right. Yeah, that would be a fun one. But then
their interpretation of targeting rules.
Yeah, hit all the bases. But the problem is that I still have to come back to this job on Monday, and I don't want to have a pink slip in my drawer if that's the case.
I have a problem with the way they adjudicate the rules.
Which is a new word that I learned yesterday. I didn't know that one existed.
Tommy talked about adjudication.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, we're not adjudicating.
Adjudication, give me a break.
Every once, back when I was had young daughters in the home, and every once in a while I needed to adjudicate.
See, I still don't even know what it means, but I'm just going to start using it.
Minister the rules.
There you go. Okay, well, I'm going to start using it in ways that it's not supposed to be used because that's what I like.
Like Ty, he was locked in on Garnard.
Oh, yeah.
And we fixed that. Mm-hmm. So we need to eliminate Garnard in adjudication.
Yep, needs to be eliminated from these radio stations and never said again. But we'll see if that actually plays out. But, so it's going to be me and Clay heading through the rest of the show here on the Morning Rush. And, Eric Musselman, when he met with the media yesterday and they're starting conference play against Texas A&M tomorrow, one of the things that I thought was really interesting was when he was asked about team fatigue, because let's be honest, Clay, when they're only playing seven guys for the most part, playing a lot of minutes, they're going to have, especially in games going to the wire, you have the rest of the SEC slate, which is going to be a grind. There's no question about it. You're not going to have these weeks off like you had before with the holiday season. It's going to be where you have two games a week. Well, Eric Musselman was asked about that, and here's what he had to say about team fatigue.
I just think there's this just natural thing of, Arkansas is going to get tired.
As the game wears on, and we know that that's not going to be the case. You've got to sub guys at media timeouts. Maybe you put them in 30 seconds before the media timeout. You take them out 30 seconds before the media timeout to get them a little bit more of an extended blow than just a 30 seconds. And so you look at the stat sheet and you think the guy's only been out for 30 seconds, but in reality, he's also been out during that timeout segment. So it's a consecutive 2.5 minutes, so to speak. So. But I think our guys, physically and mentally feel like they can fight through fatigue.
See, that's the difficult thing is that I'm seeing that as Clay, is that when I look at this team, look at just any sport in general, especially college basketball, is I was like, man, how are they going to be able to go with seven players for the entire season and having 30 plus games, possibly having to work on these guys? It seems like it's such a tall task. But Eric Musselman's pretty confident in the way that he chooses when to play guys, how I'm sure they go through recovering when it comes to the weeks of practice and everything. I just don't know if that's going to be as big of a factor as some of us may get out to be.
Yeah, the thing that's interesting, and I'm trying to do a study, a comparison between what we thought was going on with Mike Anderson's team, the up-tempo, and you can only play past 27 minutes. Well, part of it is You're not extending full court. They will play some full court if they want to speed a team up, but by and large they're playing in a half court defense, and Mike's teams did not do that. But I think some of it has to do with wearing down in practice and how you practice, and the way Musselman has explained it is that they're not going live very much. They get their conditioning done. And they're fit, but in practice they're not going 40 minutes full court, and so they're saving their legs for the game. And they do a lot of 2-on-2, 2-on-1, 3-on-2 drills instead of live work. And I think that you're seeing them coached up in situational basketball far more, because it is concentrated drills that focus just on what they want to get done, which is you know, the pick and roll situations, the help defense. They've got a complexity of drills that they use to simulate the different situations. And I think when you hear Musselman talk about going and studying other people's practices, it's how to do those kind of things. And it could be, you know, going and watching Kobe Hale's soccer team and how they break down different aspects of the game to just simulate that particular situation where they can do it over and over until it is replicated in games perfectly. And that's what I see how they play. And John, it's been a joy to watch. And, you know, it's interesting to figure out how did they get to this point so quickly. And it's all the drill work.
Mm-hmm. Well, even when you bring up the drills, I know that one of the videos I thought was so cool that the U of A put out when Eric Musselman was doing the first few practices is he was going through and explaining to all the guys how they do these particular drills and why they do these particular drills. And one of the drills that stood out is, and I remember just seeing kind of the looks on a lot of the players' faces when he said that this is a drill that we're going to do and we're going to do it often. And it's also a drill that the Golden State Warriors, the team that has been so good, they do it every single day. And when I started thinking about that and looking at how he approaches basketball and especially this team, that, you know, the NBA has a lot of games. They play a lot of games. They go on a lot of road trips. There's even more minutes that are played in a particular game in the NBA. So I'm feeling that he's probably approaching it in the same way, and he's probably seen a lot of these drills and a lot of the ways that they handle themselves in practice to make sure that his guys are staying fresh and knowing substitution patterns and knowing all of that.
Yeah, and then the obvious thing that's happened, I mean, you have to have buy-in for you to keep from getting bored with the, you know, the repetitive detail drills like that. And so what has to happen to keep from getting bored? You got to win games. And if you see that if there is results, and we're all, if we're doing something and we're losing, we get bored with it really a lot faster. But if you're winning and you see these are the things that are carrying us through in games, these drills, we see these situations happen and we're prepared for them and we do them automatically. And, you know, it's, and you can see the guys that have developed the tenacity to execute all these minute fundamentals that, I mean, the rotations in their defense are just terrific, and it's because they practiced them. And, you know, you don't have to go 5-on-5 up and down the court to get that done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's been the most impressive things defensively for me is how they rotate and how they close out on the shooter. They just seem like no matter – there's nothing given. There's no open shots. There's no just easy looks at the baskets, which you saw so many times in so many cases where it's in transition or whatnot. You just don't see those open looks like you've been seeing before, and it's as simple as just getting guys put in position to close out and to be help side defense and all of those things.
Yeah, and they do not give away kick outs to an open 3-point shooter. Somehow they do not lose their defensive shape. They might rotate, but they're always covered the 3-point shooter, and that's why they lead the nation in 3-point defense. Mm-hmm. And you know that's one of the things I look at Saturday night. Texas A&M is among the worst 3-point shooters. Mm. They shoot worse than what Arkansas allows, and that's the number one. So you may see Texas A&M shoot in the teens tomorrow night as far as 3-point shooting.
Let's go to the phone line. Sterling is in Center Ridge. What's going on, Sterling?
Oh, not so much. First, before you talk about the basketball team, I want to talk about officiating. And listen, I understand that it's a very,
yes,
very difficult job. Very, very difficult job. I understand that. But all I ask is for, I only ask two things of officials. To be thick skinned, no, make it three things. Be thick skinned, not to be confrontational, and get the obvious call. That's all I ask. I'm talking about the plumb obvious calls that everybody can see. I just want you to get those right. That's my only expectation. Anything that's remotely close, you know, everybody's human, everybody sees things different ways. That's why, you know, you see these movies where you got these eyewitnesses to the same event and they can be neutral observers and they have two different stories. Everybody sees things different in their own way. But to be confrontational and to let any any Tom, Dick, and Harry get under your skin, for just get on, just for riding you a little bit. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think you ought to be cussed and demeaned by any means. But just being yelled at, that's a bad call. You terrible. You ought to be able to take it.
I mean, you got to have rabbit ears, right?
Right. You ought to be better than that. And all I expect is you get the obvious call. That's it. And on the replays, that's the only thing I won't change. If you got to look at it if you got to look at it more than once, let's go with the call in the field. You don't got to go in super slow mo and superimpose it and see that it's one millimeter from being out of bounds. That could go either way. I'm okay, but when it's clear as day, I just want that change. That's it. I mean, and then on the targeting, they already had rules in effect for this. Spearing, using your head as a weapon, all this other stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want the game to be as safe as possible. But some of that stuff is that's why you got helmets on in the first place, because it's a collision sport and your head is going to make contact sometimes. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. You're going to be around the neck area. The offensive man is moving, ducking his head. He's blowing his head. It goes both ways, and it just seems like all the rules are just so heavily on the offensive end. And if the defender can't do anything, that's why you see them more of these highlight reels of them getting pushed down or them getting punked down, because they can't. I mean, they can't do what they used to do. And I agree with y'all totally on Musselman. I think he's a great coach, and I think he's doing a great job with the team. And Mike is doing a great job at St. John's as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did you watch that game Tuesday night? Sterling, the St. John's game.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Great game. Yeah, it was a great comeback. They got down 21 and just let it go at the end.
Yeah, the fans gave them a standing ovation going off the court.
Yeah, I was impressed. And my only – I love Musselman. I do. But what I don't like, and I brought this up because I brought this up in this program, I guess because it hasn't happened on this program. But on other programs, they can't praise Musselman without cutting. And that's my only problem. Mm-hmm. And you can praise Musselman and say he's doing a good job without acting like Mike Anderson went 2-10 two consecutive seasons. That didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, Musselman's playing with Mike's players. I mean, Mike recruited him, so that you got to give Mike credit for that too.
Guys, I love the show. Y'all having a great day.
Hey, appreciate it, Sterling. Yeah, I've never been. I hope I've never been. And because to me, the case is with the whole Mike Anderson and all that is, listen, I love Eric Musselman and what he's been able to do, but I also am very appreciative of what Mike Anderson did. And it was just, listen, it was a bad circumstance, and I don't think anybody was happy to see Mike Anderson fired, but it's more like, hey, you understand, you can still root for Mike Anderson up at St. John's. I mean, I think most Razorback fans are rooting for Mike Anderson and hoping that he does really well, but you can also say that because of that, you can also make mention that Eric Musselman and coming into the situation, inheriting the players that Mike Anderson left behind, he's been able to make some adjustments to him to really elevate their game as well. I mean, it can all be true. You don't have to compliment one and cut down the other, Clay.
No, I think that's right. Now, back to the officiating.
Yeah, the good stuff here.
Let's go to the Rose Bowl. And it just was grinding on me that the officials decided the game at the end on a marginal call. Pass interference. Wisconsin has two receivers to the left. One runs a hitch. The other is trying to clear out. The cornerback grabs him, and at the end, the offensive player just shoves his hands out to get away from him. And it's one of those they call offensive pass interference. It's a 15-yard penalty. It went from a 1st-and-10 play to a 2nd-and-25 play. Basically ended the game. And you can argue it's a close call. Yeah, you can call it either way. Well, what really should have happened is a no call and let the players decide the game. Do not decide the game with the last call of the game, and it's a marginal call. And, you know, the guy that ABC had in the box was like, well, yeah, I can see why he called it that way, but the bottom line is it was too close for comfort. And if it decides the game and it's a marginal call, then the officials have inserted them in a place they should not have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, Paul Chryst went crazy, and he's a pretty calm guy. And I mean, I think exactly what he was saying, y'all just decided the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is in that unfortunate. And, you know, it's again, I love talking about officials. And since Tommy's on the road and he's listening,
oh,
Tommy,
yeah.
He may call in. We may get so bad that he has to call in to corral us.
Yeah, well, and if that's the case, I'll make sure Matty T does not take his call, because we're having
some technical difficulties.
Yeah, we're having fair and unbiased opinions here on officiating. But no, that's the thing, Clay, is that you've seen it in different circumstances, not only just in some of these bowl games, but throughout college football and even throughout other sports as well. It's just, and even in the NFL, even, my goodness, where it's supposed to be the top of the line, you see some easy blown calls. And when those things happen, it just completely and totally creates a spark of people that are upset, that are irate, that start trying to figure out how to change and how to fix it. And some of these cases, I don't know if there's just one for surefire answer to say, all right, well, this is how you fix it. This is how you do it. I think it's just a matter of, hey, you got to do the best you can with what you got. Use the technology when you can. But don't take away from the game itself, man, and get the easy call right.
There's a bottle of tequila in the freezer for special occasions, and when that call happened, I went to it. I mean, I went to the bottle.
So, wow, the call was that bad?
Yes.
That you went to that one. Okay. Well, I mean, hey, listen, we all got our vices there, Clay. We all got our vices. Let's go back to the phone lines. JR's in Marshall. What's going on, JR?
Hey, guys. Y'all doing all right?
We're doing good, man. How about
good,
you?
Good, yeah.
Good. Hey, you know what? And this is what irks me on the replay deal, is that, you know, there's only certain calls that are reviewable by the officiating crew. Is that correct?
Correct.
Just a handful.
And see, you know,
yeah.
That, just a handful. And see, that's what, you know, the good example that you brought up is, you know, why not make it where they can review those calls? I mean, that is a game-changing situation. And anytime
it,
you have...
It ended the game. Yeah, it ended the game.
Yeah, it ended the game. And if you have the technology to review targeting... And you have ball possession, I think, is the other one they review. Why not be able to go back and review that? I mean, that changes so much of you know, how the game turns out. It blows me away that they can make the calls like that and they're not reviewable. And then, you know, either the commentators are up there going like, well, you know what, that's really a no call, or you know, I don't understand why, you know, with the speed of the game and trying to make it, you know, get crammed in there in the allotted time that's for it, that's still something that needs to be applied to all facets of the game.
I would like to see the coach be able to review one judgment call. You know, it's like I'm saving that, and I want that one. I want that one right there. And the officials decide.
I mean, that would be fair. That would be fair. I mean. All right, you guys have a good day.
Hey, appreciate it, JR. No, and listen, if you have the technology and you have the ability to check out plays and make sure that you get them right, I'm all for it. I know the people get frustrated with replay at times because they say that it slows down the game and all that. And, of course, you don't want to have the game where every single play is being reviewed. I understand that. But in crucial times and crucial moments of the game and in big calls, I don't feel like there should be anything wrong with going and checking it out just to make sure. You know, one of the prime examples in the NFL last year in the playoffs with the Saints and that pass interference call that was just egregious, or the non-pass interference call, I should say. You know, those things, yeah, they're judgment calls. Are they reviewable? Not necessarily. And I know they're trying to do some rule changes to try to fix that. But there are more things like that where I'm just saying, would it be the worst thing in the world just to go to the monitor, go to the replay, even if it's in the rule book saying it's not reviewable, and just say, hey, let's make sure we get this right because of the implications that it means.
Yeah, I mean, I hate it when it's 3 days later and the conference office is like, yeah, we blew that call. Well, I mean, you knew you blew it as soon as it happened. You just didn't comment on it until 3 days later.
Yeah.
But you could have fixed it. You could have fixed it. And you did.
Yeah.
And I know you can't review them all, or the games would take 6 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want that. But we do want, I would think that having the official check a call that is judgment once a game is not a terrible way to go.
No.
And I think the officials by and large, they're not afraid of that. I mean, it's like, hey, you know, they don't want to be the scapegoat. You know, they don't. That guy that made the call in the Rose Bowl, he doesn't want to live with that. And, you know, he looks at it again, he might say, I probably shouldn't have made that call at that particular point.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.